Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I'm your host. My work is dedicated to empowering people to live according to their own values, not my values, their values of compassion and wellness. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com. Today's topic is five things we can do to help animals in our everyday lives. And today's podcast is brought to you by the listeners of this podcast. To become a supporter, please visit ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com/support and help make this podcast possible by becoming a monthly patron. You can also make a one-time contribution. Thank you so much for each of you for your support. So hi, everybody. Welcome to today's podcast. Actually recording this podcast at night. I was about to say, I hope you're having a wonderful day, but it's actually night because I was away in Atlanta meeting so many of you wonderful listeners and readers and followers of mine in Atlanta. And I didn't have time to record the podcast before I left, and so here I am tonight recording it, and next week I'll be in Portland, Oregon, and then I'll be at Farm Sanctuary in New York, where it's going to be freezing, and I'm a little afraid, but I look forward to meeting more of you in those places. And if you'd like a bit of me every day, I've launched the Daily Dose of Compassion, which you can sign up for at dailydoseofcompassion.com, and you can choose whether you want to receive these emails every day or once a week. And when you get the once a week ones, you also get a little bit of other news and announcements, or both. You can sign up for both. And of course, it's always fun to connect with all of you on Periscope, which is a pretty awesome app that enables you to do live broadcasts, which I've been doing daily. So follow me over at Periscope and you'll get alerts and join me when I'm doing a live broadcast. And joining me means you can actually participate, which is fantastic. So if you're already following me on Twitter, which now owns Periscope, you'll also be alerted. I talked about this topic, helping animals in our everyday lives, on Periscope, but I want to reiterate these suggestions here so that they're here forever, and also because we're going to elaborate on them much more than I was able to do in a Periscope. I do have other podcast episodes on this idea. There is, of course, Critters on the Street, When to Intervene, Part 1. And Critters on the Street, When to Intervene, Part 2. But there's so much more to say about what we can do in our everyday lives. And you don't have to be an animal activist to want to help every day. You know, we can do so much just every day. Of course, we do impact animals every day in our lives. We impact them greatly. So here are some ways to help. And I've said variations of this before, but it's worth repeating that just being vegan is not the goal. I just really want to emphasize this. It's not the end, right? It's not the end. It's a means to an end, and that end is unconditional compassion. For me, being vegan is about doing everything I can in my everyday life, in my everyday behavior, to not contribute to violence against anyone. I don't want anyone to suffer because of me. I didn't become vegan because I wanted to wear a badge that says vegan or because I wanted to be part of a club called vegan. This thing called vegan is just the most direct and obvious and effortless and practical way to accomplish these goals. Animals are being hurt because of my not eating them, then I'm not going to eat them. It's like very direct. It's very obvious. That's really what becoming vegan was about for me. And I think it's amazing because unfortunately there are so many ways we hurt animals in our society. And I just love that there's this opportunity to step back and say, well, I'm not going to participate there. I'm not going to hurt animals in that way and actually have an impact while doing that. In other words, there aren't that many causes that we can do something about so directly. What I mean is that in caring about animals, there are things I can do every day to impact individual animals and, of course, impact the big picture in terms of exploitation of animals. So let me share some things with you that I think make us better citizens, that enable us to manifest our values of compassion and kindness, and that actually make a difference in the lives of individuals. For the first one, this is something I've talked about also on NPR. You know, I contribute to National Public Radio's San Francisco affiliate, KQED. And so this is very short, so I thought I would just share it with you here because it encapsulates number 1. So let me just read to you. This is an editorial that I had written several years ago and that was on KQED, but I think it encapsulates it really well. So I want to share it with you. I admit to being one of those people who can't resist greeting every animal I encounter. My husband has accepted that on our evening walks, we're often interrupted by my need to pet every dog being walked and every cat lounging on the sidewalk. I've also been known to bring animals home with us, dogs who are clearly lost, cats who are clearly homeless. I don't seek out wandering dogs or hungry-looking cats, but they seem to find me. And at that moment, when I realize I have to intervene, my first thought is always, oh no, I'm in a rush. I don't have time. This isn't my problem. But that voice is never loud enough to make me turn away. It would be easier to do so, certainly more convenient, especially for my own two cats who have to relinquish a part of their living space for whatever refugee happens to come home with us. But if it's not my problem, then whose is it? By virtue of being part of a larger community, I can't help but feel a responsibility to care for all its members, particularly those who are the most vulnerable. Gandhi once said, "The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated." By that definition, we have a long way to go. But there's so much we can do to make sure that no one suffers needlessly. I keep leashes, treats, and blankets in my car and have the number for my local animal shelter stored in my cell phone. I support spay-neuter clinics, and I've pulled over many times to move a lifeless body out of the street, calling when there's a telephone number on the tag and creating a proper burial when there's not. Basically, I've come to accept that whatever plans I have on any given day may be curtailed by an unexpected critter who happens to cross my path. These small steps reap huge rewards, namely reuniting animals with their people, providing shelter to the lost and abandoned, and just knowing that a few moments of inconvenience for me makes a world of difference in the lives of others. So like I said, if it's not my problem, whose is it? By virtue of being part of this larger community, I can't help but feel a responsibility for everybody. And so that is number one, intervene. Intervene, of course, when it's possible. So there are so many situations, I'm sure so many of you can identify with this as well. There are so many situations where there have been animals who are clearly in need, who clearly need some intervention, who clearly need help, and some are successful and some are not. I would say most are successful in the cases where I've chased animals down to get them safely back to my place or to the shelter, whatever the situation has been. And there have been some failures. There was a failure a couple weeks ago. My husband and I were actually driving on our street, which is a slow, winding street. So people don't go that quickly, which is good. Luckily, we don't see a lot of, I don't think I've ever seen an animal hit by a car on our street at all. But up in the hills where it's a little more windy and there are a lot of blind spots, I hear a lot about animals who are hit by cars. But a couple weeks ago, we were driving on our street and we were actually just going to lunch. It was a Saturday and a car had stopped in front of us, just like in the middle of the street. And our car is parked on either side. And I was thinking, why are you stopped? Like, why are you stopping in the middle of the street? That's ridiculous. And it's not safe. And I got a little annoyed. And then I saw the woman get out of the car and run behind us. And I saw that she was chasing a little dog. And she turned back to us and she had tried running and getting the dog and she couldn't. And so she came back to she passed our car first, going back to her car. And she said, "I'm so sorry, but I saw this little dog. He ran out in front of us and I wanted to try and get him." And she couldn't. And so immediately, of course, David and I were like, "Okay, now we have to do this. We have to go try and get this dog." So immediately I get out my phone. Immediately I put on the listserv that there is a dog running around, and she was running around on the street, like on our street, like in the middle of the street. But like I said, luckily people don't go that quickly. Let's just say for a half hour, we chased the dog in the car and then on foot. Like at one point I got out of the car and I'm running up the hill and I'm like chasing this dog and I'm in flip flops and she just kept running and running. She was this little tiny thing with a little pink harness. And finally at one point I'm chasing her, my flip flops. I'm not making much progress. David stops the car. He starts running and he goes, "Just go to the car." And I like get in the car and I start trying to follow them because she's running so quickly. I didn't even know where they went. Anyway, found them. David was kind of in a standoff with her. She was standing there just like looking at him. And I was like, "Oh gosh, you have her. Oh my God, that's amazing." And she was just growling at him. So David didn't feel comfortable enough to pick her up. And so when I got there, of course, she had started running again. Long story short, we didn't get her. And I put her picture. I was able to get a picture of her. And other neighbors by then knew that she was running around. It was on the listserv. A bunch of neighbors were putting it on all the other listservs and like texting me. And, you know, everybody just kind of pooled together and I found out. So we went to lunch because I couldn't get the dog. She actually couldn't find her finally. And then when we were coming back from lunch, we saw some neighbors and we asked if they had seen this dog. They said they had, and that the dog's people were well aware of it and they were trying to get her. And they had said that she was way up on another part of the neighborhood and the people were on it. The dog's people were on it. But, you know, sometimes it's not successful, but we tried. And I really do keep treats. I had treats, but she didn't come for them. I think you kind of want to have some strong smelling treats. You might even want to have some canned food in your car that you can open, like little tiny cans. So, you know, you don't have a huge waste if they don't come to you for that, cats and dogs, but something that's really strong smelling. And I had a leash that I was chasing around with so that if I was able to get her, I would have at least been able to put her, you know, on a leash. And I keep towels in the car. And of course, you can do a lot more. You can look online for little, you know, kits that you can get. You can keep a carry case in your car, boxes in your car. I've definitely kept boxes in my car for this purpose, and I need to get one in my hatchback again, because even for dead animals that I have found, it's been helpful to have a box in the car. So it is helpful, and I really do, you know, do everything I can to get the animals, but I'm not very successful all the time. And I tell more stories on the critters in the on the street episodes, but I do have several numbers in my phone that I highly recommend you have on your phone. So animal control and the local non-emergency police number and a 24-hour emergency vet clinic. These are numbers to have in your phone. And I encourage you to like pause right now and go find a number for each of these in your area. And that way, if you come upon an animal who needs help, you A, can you know who to bring the animal to. I even think you should add the address, especially to the 24-hour emergency vet clinics. I have three in my phone in three different towns near me. I actually need to get San Francisco in there. I have Berkeley, two in Berkeley and one in San Leandro, which isn't far from me. But those are 24-hour clinics and I have their address in there too. And not that, you know, most of us have our smartphones with us, but maybe you don't have internet. Maybe you can't get internet. Maybe you just want to just quickly call them and then you'll know how to get there. So having the address is really helpful as well. But 24-hour emergency vet clinics, animal control, and local non-emergency police, which is good to have on your phone anyway, because by the way, you should probably know that 911 doesn't work on your cell phone. You probably know that. So even for an emergency that's not animal related in the, you know, this kind of thing, if you can't dial 911 on your cell phone. So having even the actual emergency police number on your cell phone, it's usually a different number than 911. So yeah, so those are three numbers to have on your phone. Another number to have on your phone is the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center. And that's also a 24-hour hotline, 365 days a year. And so this is, you know, if you come upon an animal who may be poisoned or even your own animal, of course, this is also about helping every day, includes our own animals. Having the Animal Poison Control Center number in your phone is really helpful. And I can give you that number if you want to write it down, but you can also look it up. It's 888-426-4435. And that number is in my phone as well. Now, of course, with animal control or city and municipal shelters, they're not usually open 24 hours. And I should say, there are obviously also animal shelters you should have in your phone. I said animal control because for me, the city of Oakland is, you know, the city shelter. But of course, there's also the SPCA. So having shelter numbers in your phone is also helpful. But of course, municipal shelters, city shelters, private shelters, animal control, they're not open 24 hours. I mean, they're just not. So if an animal isn't injured and doesn't need emergency care, but you can't get them to a shelter and it's off hours, then, you know, you take the animal home and deal with it when the shelter is open the next day. But what about when you see an animal in need, you know, like on the freeway and you want to help, but you can't directly intervene? For instance, when I was in Atlanta and we were driving back from the airport, to the hotel, and the person who was in charge of getting me and a colleague to our hotel, we were driving in lots and lots and lots of traffic. We were driving north, I believe. And so there's, you know, we're on the freeway, lots of traffic. So we were pretty stopped. And as we're driving, all of a sudden, our friend noticed a dog on the freeway in the shoulder running opposite the direction opposite of us. So we couldn't turn around. We're on a freeway, going in one direction. And it was raining and it was a pit mix and the dog was just kind of cantering actually in the opposite direction on the shoulder, but moving pretty quickly. And we immediately, of course, were like, oh my God. And so Jennifer got on the phone right away and it was 6 o'clock at night. So the shelters weren't open. You know, animal control wasn't open. And frankly, I don't think they would have come out anyway. So Jennifer called what in her city, she's very lucky to have this service. It's called the Hero Truck, which stands for Highway Emergency Response Operators. And it's a freeway service patrol operated in Atlanta. And it's operated by the Georgia Department of Transportation. I think also State Farm Insurance now helps fund it through a grant. And they're there to minimize traffic congestion by clearing wrecked and disabled vehicles from travel lanes, but also providing traffic control at incident scenes. Like, they operate also as a service patrol so they can assist stranded motorists. But it was so brilliant to call them because, of course, there could be an accident, whether a person hitting another car or a person hitting the dog. So it was really brilliant to be able to call this service, which I wish every city had. And that was all we could do. Like, we couldn't get this dog. There was just no way we could get this dog. And hopefully there are other people like you listening who maybe would have seen the dog. You know, we were also in the far lane. We weren't in the lane closest to the shoulder. We were on the outside lane. And so maybe someone who was in an inside lane would have, you know, grabbed the dog and helped. I'm sure someone helped. I hope someone helped. But in that case, who do you call? So in Georgia, motorists can call 511, and that's how they can get hero assistance. But what about when we're not in Atlanta? I it's a tough situation. So, you know, one of the things you can do in a situation like that is maybe you can try calling AAA or some other kind of roadside assistance. They might have a suggestion or a thought about how to help. But at least if you're in Georgia and you're in the situation, it couldn't hurt to try. But isn't that clever? I was just really moved by that. And since I was in the middle of writing this episode, when I was gone, I was like, okay, I've got to add that. So those in Georgia, you can call Hero. If you do decide to take the animal home, I do recommend creating a safe space for that animal, of course, especially if you have your own animals, to not have them interact. I, in my previous home, had a room that I was able to close off from the rest of the house. I called it the holding room. In this case, the only holding room, which I could still do, actually. I guess technically I still have a holding room. It's just that, so it's our laundry room, and that's where the kitties litter boxes. And of course, it has a tile floor, so that makes it easier if there's a mess. You know, it's just the way it is. I mean, you don't want fleas in a rug or anything like that. So it's a tile floor. So it's really perfect room for litter boxes and for anybody coming in with dirty paws or what have you. And of course, this happens a lot in the wintertime when you're taking in an animal and if they're muddy, etc. So I have this room, but the reason I'm hesitating is because I have a little arch cut in the very bottom of the door, because that's the way the kitties go in and out of their little room for their litter box, but enables us to close the door so we don't, you know, smell the litter box or anything like that. So there's a hole in the door, which is why I was saying that I don't have a holding room, but of course I could close off that hole. And of course we'd be able to at least give a safe, warm space to someone if they needed it. So far in this home, we haven't had to, but definitely having a room where you can close them off from your own animals to keep them safe. And lots of times when it's an animal who's, you know, who's lost, they're scared. And so giving them kind of a small, intimate space for them to feel comfortable in and not just be overwhelmed by some huge room or unfamiliar house is always really helpful. And of course, by then you're going to already have contacted the appropriate agency to let them know that you have this animal and provide a description of them so that in case the animal guardian calls them, they can say, yes, someone already has your animal. And of course, as soon as you can, bring the animal to a shelter or a vet who scans for microchips. So that's really the first thing you're going to want to do when you can get to a shelter. And then, of course, you know, write out to your listserv wherever you found the animal, as many listservs as you can. I've talked about Nextdoor being a service that a lot of people are using these days. It's like a neighborhood list serve, and you can type in the neighborhood. You can be part of several neighborhoods. I'm part of several neighborhoods, and it's just a listserv to be able to communicate with people in your neighborhood. So Nextdoor is an option for that, but lots of neighborhoods already have a listserv through Google Groups or Yahoo Groups. So make sure you post that. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, contemporary way of posting flyers. but I would also post flyers and around the area, pictures. I always stop and look at pictures when there's a picture of an animal who's lost, you know, their picture on a telephone pole. I always look. And then, of course, you can also post to veterinary hospitals and on websites such as petfinder.com. And of course, if you've tried to find the guardian without success and you're unable to keep the animal long term, you can try and rehome the animal. But just know that if you take the animal to a shelter, you're going to have to decide in advance. If they don't have the resources, they're most likely going to euthanize the animal if you're unable to take the responsibility financially for whatever care is necessary. Or if you take the animal to an emergency vet, you're also going to be responsible for the financial cost if you haven't found the guardian yet. And that's something you're just going to have to decide on. And, you know, it's one of those things, again, in terms of being a citizen of our community, I think that's something we just have to be willing to take on if we're able. So that's number one, intervene. And of course, I'm talking about intervening for domesticated animals like dogs and cats. But number two is help wildlife. And there's so many ways you can help wildlife, again, in our everyday lives. And I want you to pause again and put wildlife resource numbers in your phone. So look up wildlife rescue folks in your area, a couple wildlife rehabbers in your phone, get them in your phone, at least one in your phone, so you know who to call if you see an animal hit by a car or a wild animal in distress, and we'll talk more about details. You can also call animal control, of course, and I know a lot of people are worried about doing that because they will often just come out and then ultimately, you know, put this animal down. Not always, and they might also have resources for you. So you could also try calling animal control, but calling a wildlife rehab center, of course, is the best thing. We are so lucky in the San Francisco Bay Area to have Wild Care, which is just a phenomenal resource for wildlife. They are just an amazing machine of people who take care of wildlife, every kind of wildlife you can imagine. And they have just volunteers all around who will come and help you or pick up the animal for you and bring it back to Wild Care. If you're close enough and you can get the animal in a crate, then you can bring it to Wild Care. It's just phenomenal. So Wild Care, for those who are in the San Francisco Bay Area, but outside of that, I know there are wildlife rehabbers and wildlife centers, wildlife rescue places all around. So make sure you find one and put that number in your phone. And when you're out of town, of course, you're going to want to have your smartphone with you so that you can search right away for that city that you're in for wildlife rehabilitation or wildlife rescue or wildlife help, you know, something like that. And that was the situation I was in when I was in Florida and I found that raccoon who needed my help. And luckily I was able to find someone. But you know, for me, that was such a frustrating situation because the raccoon had been suffering for 7 hours or more when the people discovered this raccoon. They were just waiting for animal control. Of course, animal control wasn't coming. After 7 hours, you must know that. And so I was there for 30 seconds and typed in on my phone wildlife rescue and found a place to bring the animal. Now, these folks would never have done that, but I was able to do it. And I drove 45 minutes to a place. Unfortunately, the raccoon didn't make it, but I was gratified that I was able to at least give some peace to this animal who was suffering greatly. So that is number one for the wildlife, which is number two in our list, but intervening for wildlife as well. And I'll talk a little bit more about when to intervene and when not to intervene. But for those of you who follow me, you know that I provide water and food for certain wildlife. And I know that this is incredibly valuable for all wildlife. I have tubs of water and trays of water and bird baths and fountains all around my property. And I see skunks, foxes, birds, squirrels, deer, opossum. I see every kind of little critter using the water, drinking the water, not using it. They're not like showering and bathing. They're drinking it. But actually, some are bathing. But it's not like I have them like showering and like la la la. But they're drinking it. And so have different tubs of different sizes for different size critters. And when I say that, I mean it because, you know, I have a couple of large tubs of water that the deer will drink from. And of course, the raccoons can drink, like they can kind of prop themselves up. But I see squirrels sometimes prop themselves, like they kind of like brace themselves with their little paws on the corner of the tub, you know, like on either corner. And then like you know, hold themselves while they just dip their little head in and drink. And of course, if it's not filled up all the way, it's hard for them and they don't want to fall in and it's not that deep that they would drown. But that's something I make sure of. I make sure that it's not so deep that they would drown. The tub's not that big, but that's a consideration. And so I have a tray of water next to that one. And that's very shallow. That's like a tray for like the bottom of big plant pots, like, you know, big ceramic plant pot. I use those trays for birds in addition to bird baths. And I'll get back to that in a second. But I see the little morning doves always go to that little tray of water. And squirrels sometimes, and frankly, the deer sometimes drink from there too. And I'm like, no, you have the deep water. Go to the deep tub. Like, don't drink from the little tray. And so I see all different size animals use them, but I'm considerate of that. Also, when you do fill water in a bird bath, you know, lots of times bird baths are kind of, they can be deep. You can fill it all the way and you've got a lot of water. Well, it might seem intuitive to put a lot of water in a bird bath, but birds don't want to swim. They want to wade and just be able to easily wash themselves. That's usually by just kind of dipping down. You've seen them just kind of like dip their little butt in and shake their little tails and shake their little feathers. So, or like, you know, flip their little wing in the water and then like shake it out. So there's ways for them to do it, but they don't want to swim. So don't fill the bird baths all the way up. Just fill it enough so that birds large and small can get in there and get a good little bath. And then I always have running water. So I mentioned the two fountains I have. And oh my God, I mean, there are so many birds that come to these fountains, hummingbirds and larger birds, and there's a million birds I'm not naming. So like, trust me, there's just every kind of bird, small, like hummingbirds, and large, like crows. I mean, I've seen every size. Bees also love the running water. So you're attracting other wildlife besides just birds as well. And it's amazing. It's really amazing. Now, birds and other critters need water in the winter as well. Now, of course, I don't live in an area where it freezes, but many of you do. If they can obviously drink water, birds can obviously drink water, and other critters can drink water from the snow, or they can, not drinking water, but they can get some sustenance from the snow or ice. But if there's liquid water, that's what they'd prefer. So you can search online for bird baths that have a built-in heating element, if that's something you can do and want to do, and you'll be helping lots of other critters as well. And you can also search for heated mechanisms that could even create like a little pond effect, so that it's again, liquid water, so they can drink that. I do feed the birds, and I think, you know, in the wintertime, especially even here where it gets cold and rainy, the birds all eat from the bird feeder. But you know, you do have to be aware that if you have a backyard feeder and you stop feeding them for any reason, the birds, you know, could suffer if there's not enough natural food in the area to satisfy all of them, because you're attracting a lot more birds than they would normally be in one concentrated area when you have a bird feeder. So if you start feeding them, you need to keep feeding them at least until spring arrives and natural food is more plentiful. So make sure when you go on vacation, you have your house sitters or your neighbors or friends stop by to make sure those feeders are filled up, especially in the wintertime. Other ways you can help wildlife. I mean, again, this is like everyday stuff. This is like stuff that does not make you an activist, that doesn't take you outside of your normal day-to-day, you know, work. It doesn't take that much time. It doesn't take that much money. Although you can consider that's also part of a contribution you're making. If, you know, if you don't donate to organizations, but you're paying for, you know, bird food, that's significant. Like, that's a big help. So there are a lot more things you can do for wildlife. And I just want to say thank you again to the listeners who are supporting this podcast. You can go to ColleenPatrickGoodreau.com/support to make this podcast possible. As you know, I create content in many different mediums, and I do this for you to enable you to manifest your values of compassion and kindness. And of course, I do this for the animals, both human and non-human. So your support means everything to me. It enables me to do this, and I appreciate everything you can do. So planting trees, all right? Okay, that's maybe a little more than just like an everyday thing, but planting trees, but also not cleaning up. So this is actually something you should like, because not cleaning up as much as you would normally do really provides a lot for wildlife. Like a dead tree sometimes can be more beneficial than even a live one. Like all sorts of critters love dead trees. trees and branches, mammals and birds alike often will eat the wood-eating insects that infest the trunks and the branches. And then, of course, leaving standing dead wood, sometimes where they are, can really, really make a difference. And of course, twigs and those kinds of things, brush and everything, birds will use for nests, depending on the bird. So planting trees and then not cleaning up in parts of the yard where it doesn't matter, where people really can't see it. I think it goes without saying, but I have got to say it, is not using chemicals on your plants and on your lawn, and getting rid of bug zappers. I know that probably a lot of you listeners are not using bug zappers, but it's really important, I think, to let friends and family know about the problems with these things harming wildlife and their habitats. But chemicals used outdoors, of course, that's a given, can kill birds and beneficial insects, such as bees and butterflies and other beneficial insects. But these zappers can also harm the beneficial insects. Of course, they're going to kill mosquitoes and other biting insects, but they also attract a lot of insects who might not be attracted to the light, but they're attracted to heat and carbon dioxide. So these insects that would otherwise serve as food for birds and bat and fish, they're killed. So we're talking about like thousands of insects who serve as food for birds and bats and fish, animals we care about, or at least birds, most of us care about, bats and fish, but people at least understand that they're part of the whole ecological system. And so, you know, just letting folks know. And I know sometimes it can be awkward, because if you're at a house and someone has a bug zapper, you don't want to appear to be judgmental. And I think there are ways to go about talking to our friends and family if they have something like that, to let them know that it's harming other animals. Of course, planting a wildlife garden, you know, again, this is kind of everyday stuff, so that you're attracting bees and native birds and hummingbirds and butterflies. You can have a bee garden. There's so many resources out there in books on like planting a bee garden or a butterfly garden, or just a wildlife garden, so that everybody can enjoy. And then this is, again, something really simple in terms of helping animals, is cleaning up litter. There are a lot of things that can really harm other animals. They become these traps, basically. You know, it could be something like discarded fishing line. It could be plastic twine that ensnare birds and other animals, and that, of course, either choke them or they can't eat because of it, or whatever they eat that they think is food, but it's actually plastic. So that means they starve, or they become easy prey for predators, which I get that there's the entire prey-predator relationship, but where we can avoid, like where we can help, because, you know, we created the problem, then we should help. And so I know that nobody on this podcast, listening to this podcast, litters. Like, I know none of you do, but other people do. And so you might clean up your own litter, but in this case, I'm suggesting that you actually clean up other people's litter, because by doing so, you may be disarming a dangerous trap that might otherwise harm someone. So you could be saving a life. So cleaning up plastic bags, if you see them, definitely if you see, you know, containers of paint or motor oil or liquid chemicals, if you see plastic bags, if you see any plastic bag on the street ever, you should pick it up. We should all pick it up. When you see plastic bags, especially that have the handles, where an animal can get caught in just the handle and then suffocate, that's a reason to pick up that plastic bag. And then, of course, we all know about the soda plastic things. What are they called? The little rings. Because, of course, we know many birds who've gotten ensnared in those. So pick up after someone else is what I'm suggesting. I know you're like, but I pick up after myself. Why should I pick up after anybody else? Because it's not about them. It's about helping the animals. Now, the question is, when is it not appropriate to intervene? And of course, the big question is usually about birds. It's really important to understand that the entire notion that birds have a keen sense of smell, and so if you touch a baby bird, that parent will abandon or reject that bird, is not true. They do not have a great sense of smell at all. They have a pretty poor sense of smell, birds do. But that doesn't mean that every time you see a bird on the ground, he needs your help. Many species of birds, robins, scrub jays, crows, owls, they leave the nest and they spend as many as 2 to 5 days on the ground before they can fly. It's totally normal, and it's part of the young bird's development. So while they're on the ground, These birds are cared for and protected by their parents and are taught vital life skills, and they don't necessarily need your help. It's really important, I think, to understand the different ages of birds so that you can understand when they need your help and when they don't. So there are hatchlings, nestlings, and fledglings. And hatchlings, of course, are those who have just hatched and they're from 0 to 3 days old, and their eyes are closed, and they might have, you know, little wisps of down on their body. And if they have fallen out of a nest or they appear injured, you can help that bird. You can either, if the nest is close by, you can put the bird back in the nest, or you can make your own little nest, you know, little strawberry box with, you know, some dry brush in it, and then you can hang it near where you found the bird. That is something you can do. But nestlings are kind of a different story. As I said, as they're starting to get older, some of them, as they're learning, they don't necessarily need your help. Nestlings have their eyes open by day 3. They have pin feathers. These are kind of like their first feathers. They respond to the alarm call of a parent. And of course, if you hear that, the parent's nearby and you don't need to worry, maybe put them off of if they're in a sidewalk or something, move them over so that they're safe, like on, you know, a little stretch of grass or something. And then fledglings, of course, are older. They have feathers. They're fully feathered. And they're about 13 to 14 days old, and they can flutter and hop. They can go from branch to branch, but they have short tails and wings, and so they can leave the nest, but they might not be fully flying, especially between days 14 and 28. That's how old a fledgling would be, about 28 days old. And then they're full adults. So they may not have mastered flying. But if you find a hatchling or a nestling on the ground and you can see the nest, as I said, you can help that bird. Do not worry about the parent rejecting their young. But, you know, again, just like, you know, kind of do it in a way that's still going to be safe for the bird. And you don't have to take the bird away unless the bird is absolutely injured. But leave the bird nearby where you found him. If there's no nest, like I said, you can make your own. But if you do see a fledgling and you see them kind of hopping around on the ground, these are the ones who are older that are fully feathered and they're trying to master flying. They are often there by themselves and they don't necessarily need your help. The parent is most likely nearby. It's really only if you see a bird who's injured, you know, like by a cat or something like that, or if they're in a place that would be dangerous for them and you can move them over, that would be better for them. So that's when not to intervene. And then, you know, just frankly, this is more than a tip for helping every day, but this would be a way to help every day if you actually went and did this. But you could also consider becoming a wildlife rehabilitator. I've often thought about apprenticing myself to a rehabber and even getting licensed. And it's something I still think about a lot because I really want to have the opportunity to help in a much more effective way or serious way if I see an animal. So you can contact a local wildlife rehabber, ask them some questions. You can contact a wildlife center, or you can also contact your local, sorry, I have to use this language, fish and game agency for licensing requirements and other information. So I would consider that, and then you can actually intervene every day in a very significant way. So that's number 2, is help wildlife. Number three, I'm going to talk about in a much more elaborate way when I do an entire podcast on this. Number 3 is humanely removing uninvited visitors from your home. So I'm going to do a longer episode dedicated to humane removal of uninvited guests because it affects so many of us and so many of us in our everyday lives. But I want to say here is the first thing I really want to encourage us all to think about when we're talking about uninvited guests. And you notice that I'm not using the word pests because I think that's one of the things we need to change is our thinking about those who are uninvited because that's what they are. And we call them pests and I am not using that word. I think we need to just relax a little bit and stop worrying about living in so sterile of environment. And of course, I'm not suggesting that we just invite them all in, right? I'm not suggesting we do that because of course there are considerations for safety and just practical considerations because they can bite through wires. Rats can pierce water pipes. Like, you know, there are considerations, but we freak out a little too much, I think, when it comes to expecting our houses to be completely sealed and never, never have anybody who wasn't invited in our homes. So that's one thing. You know, we are animals. We live in this world. Our world overlaps with other animals, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think we need to change the way we think a little bit about other animals and our proximity to them and our relationship with them. So that for me is kind of number one, in understanding that we can't seal ourselves off from nature. I mean, the whole joke is that we want to live near nature, but then we like don't want it in our house. Nature's going to seep in. Okay. Like cracks will form, holes will be made, like artificial man-made materials will break down. Nature breaks down, right? I mean, it's part of life, which means the critters will find their way into our homes. And as long as we're not in grave danger, I think we need to relax a little bit and we can then escort them out. And we'll talk about that in great detail in a subsequent episode. Related to that, I think we need to stop calling them pests. I think the way we talk about them influences the way we treat them. So I think we should stop talking about them as pests, even if we don't consider them such. Changing our language so that friends and family are influenced by our language, I think, is really helpful. Now, the thing to remember, especially if you have a critter in your home right now who was uninvited, is they get into our homes because they found a way to get into our homes. So if we don't want them in our homes because we don't want them puncturing water pipes or chewing electrical wire or dying in our attic, which let's face it, you know, a decomposing corpse is not pleasant, even if you love the animal when he was alive. So I get it. But there are ways to mostly keep out the larger critters, of course. There's the smaller ones. Of course, we're going to have to talk about the termites and ants and those kinds of things as well. But the larger mammals, especially raccoons and squirrels and possums and rats and mice and even snakes, you know, honestly, close up the holes, like find where they're coming in and seal those holes up. So seal up your home and then we will talk about escorting them out, because of course you want to seal up the holes after you make sure they're gone so that you don't trap them inside, because then of course you could have a situation where you have a dead animal in your attic, etc. And then of course, just because I have to say this, and this is everyday stuff we can do, please make sure people listening to this and friends and family know that glue traps and sticky traps, they're called, are incredibly inhumane. The whole idea is that an animal gets stuck on this glue trap that is so sticky that they can't get off of it. And so the whole idea is that the animals die slowly from dehydration, which is horrific. And then sometimes they also chew their own limbs off to get away. So it's just not humane in any way. And I've had people say like, no, they're better than like the trap. No. Glue traps are even more horrific, I think, than the ones that catch them. Poison also, I would obviously recommend against it. I would say that's not humane. So we will return to this topic in greater detail. Number four, this is related to what I just said about calling animals pests. I do think that in our everyday lives, something we can do that I think is very significant is change the way we talk about them. I do think the way we talk about animals reflects and influences the way we treat them. And so I encourage you to revisit my podcast episodes on language and implement some changes in your language to use compassionate rather than violent language to talk about animals. The way we represent them in our language will not only help shift the paradigm for animals, it also may inspire a conversation with the people we talk to, or at least shine a light on how we refer to animals with such violence in our language, and it might help them really see how violently we actually treat them. So here are a few ways you can change the way you talk about them every day. And of course, these are idioms. You've heard me talk about this before, but again, this is a podcast episode on everyday ways. And this is something we do every day, is communicate. So instead of kill two birds with one stone, cut two carrots with one knife. Instead of there's more than one way to skin a cat, there's more than one way to peel a potato, or there's more than one way to squeeze a lemon. Instead of there's no use beating a dead horse, there's no use watering a dead flower. Instead of running around like a chicken with his head cut off, running around in a frenzied state. It's not as sexy as an idiom with an image, but that's what I got. There's no room to swing a cat. There's no room to swing a chair. Don't put the cart before the horse. Don't put your shoes on before your socks, or don't slice the bread before it's baked. I like the rhythm of that one. Don't slice the bread before it's baked, instead of don't put the cart before the horse. Instead of shoot the bull, shoot the breeze. Instead of take the bull by the horns, jump in with both feet. Instead of kill the fatted calf, break out the best china or pour the best wine, I think I prefer. So instead of kill the fatted calf, pour the best wine. Instead of eat like a pig, eat like a glutton. So just a few changes in our language will make a difference in how we characterize these beings that we share this world with. And I think it will make a huge difference. I do think it makes a difference. I know it does. And number five, the fifth way that we can help animals in our everyday lives is to not eat them. And that might be a given for many of you who are listening, but for others, it's not. And it might be so obvious, but it is absolutely worth saying because, as I said, there's no other thing we can do in our lives that has such an impact. By not consuming animals, we have such an impact on individuals and, of course, on the larger issue. Be kind to animals. Don't eat them. If you say you can't not eat all animals, then how about some animals? Start somewhere, but don't do nothing because you can't do everything. Do something, anything. And so I hope that helps everybody to just give you some things in our everyday lives we can do to make a difference for the animals in our lives, animals we encounter, animals we want to help. So for the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.